Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Am I tough enough?
Strong and stable leadership.
Total rhubarb.
Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
Shut the fridge.
Not another one.
It's the Politics Show cast.
Love podcasts, hate nonsense. It's the Politics Show podcast. Ding dong. The witch is dead.
Which witch?
The wicked witch. Ollie. Ollie's dead.
Oh, him.
Yeah, fucking.
We did not mention his name.
No, you're welcome, listeners. You're going to have 4 Ollie-less episodes back to back.
Yeah, you lucky bastards.
I've saved you. There's no more
Oh,
farming.
You can't say that anymore, can you?
What?
Bastards.
Why?
Well, you can't say English bastards anymore.
Oh. okay, explain that.
At the, I've forgotten the football club. Why?
Wrexham
FC, there was a fan who shouted, "You English bastards," and it was racist. So he got a court fine. I think it was like £790 and he's been banned from the ground.
That's insane.
Can't even call anyone English anymore.
Who reported that?
Someone wet.
Oh, some absolute...
No, I think it was on police body-worn cameras, so I don't know if it was the police themselves who...
See all the really serious crimes that don't get prosecuted. And they're like, well, we'll make this a priority. This is an open and shut case.
Yeah.
The scourge of anti-English racism in Wales. We need to undo it. There's going to be a lot of comments accusing me of being racist towards English people now.
But you are. Regularly. Sometimes my voice grates on you.
In a way that I think is my right.
Okay.
I think it's kind of... comes with a
good thing
a
that
package.
We've committed this to film.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. No, look, you can't even say you don't like English people anymore without
being
locked
up. Quite kink that
up.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, that's.
that's call me English.
That's where I think people get arrested.
Yeah.
Being choked out. Ava, you've had a morning. You've been doing some serious news gathering.
Yes. The latter of which will come tomorrow. Let's just preface this bit by saying, when I finished interviewing Sadiq, he said that his kids really like Politics Show, which is extremely concerning if you've heard any of the other podcasts.
I knew his nickname. But he didn't mention his being called Sadiq Hans. So.
He didn't mention that. He didn't mention third trimester either. Now, if you know Sadiq... Just keep that between us, okay?
Yep.
That's
yep.
just something that we're doing, okay?
It's a secret.
Yeah. Right, so this morning, Sadiq Khan, obviously the Gaza news has been dominating the agenda for the past couple of days since 7 aid workers were killed by an IDF airstrike. Sadiq Khan this morning said that there should be an immediate ceasefire. I presume actually he'd want that as well. But he said that there should be an immediate halt to British arms exports to Israel because Britain does provide quite a number of, well, not just bombs, but intelligence. So quite mm-hmm. military equipment that is satellites, that sort of thing. And he has said that the advice that has been given to the Conservative government is likely says that Israel are breaching humanitarian law. And in light of that, Britain has an obligation to cease or to halt exports of these arms to Israel. And he said that that should happen immediately. And it means he's the first senior Labour politician to properly say that, to really say that on record. There have been a couple of others. David Lammy urged UK arms sales to be halted if there was a serious breach of international law. Sadiq said it needs to stop right now. And he actually drew a comparison to Gordon Brown, who, when he was Prime Minister, went to the United Nations and forced a motion on a ceasefire when Israel had gone into Gaza during that time.
It's interesting that that is... So three Brits have been killed by the IDF, and we are wringing our hands about whether or not we should still continue to sell arms to them. Given that context, it does seem slightly insane that we are still in diplomatic relations.
There's two thoughts that I have that run concurrently. The first thought is that I'm annoyed that it's on the national agenda now because it's three British veterans that have been killed, and so it's like, okay, well, you can only understand the atrocity if it's through, you know, the white lens. Yep. Like three white men were killed, and so suddenly we're up in arms about it. But then my other school of thought is that for all of the flag, so just go with this, all of the flag conversation that's been happening over the past few weeks, the flag that's been defiled by Nike and then by Team GB, you would have thought that the people who cared so much about the flag and what that represents, which is, you know, patriotism and a care for citizens, presumably, you would be totally furious that another government has authorised the killing of three of Britain's civilians. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I suppose it just shows the hollowness of the flag bullshit, as in people on the right use that as a like talk about like Britishness and like deface the flag and like sing the national anthem, because ultimately it means nothing and they have no answers and no ideas or guts to do anything. This is something. Three Brits have been killed by another state. What are you going to do about it? Nothing is the answer.
And if it was the Russians, what would we be doing?
But then it's interesting, what would happen if it was Saudi?
I imagine that there probably would have been David Cameron on a flight straight away to have the discussions with, you know, what's happened here? Why has this happened? And what are we going to do about it?
Did you see the Haaretz journalist on the BBC? I actually don't remember his name, which is poor of me. But he said, he's like, I'm not terribly interested in an investigation. Or, like, why would you want an investigation? It would just give you, like, say the name of the commander who did it. And the BBC presenter was like, well, an investigation could show that it was a mistake. And the Haaretz was like, a mistake? Like, just totally dismissive of the idea that this was unintentional.
Well,
which I think is the simplest, is obvious.
Because it seems a bit of a farce.
Oh, it's farcical. The idea that this was an accident is complete farce. Completely farcical. This is real, like, well, I say this is a mask-off moment, as if they haven't been killing thousands and thousands of Palestinians. This is like...
But that was an accident too, Ed.
Sorry, you're right, actually. I've not been reading the briefs from BB closely enough.
Well, Laura has been sending them.
You're shilling Laura.
Any other foreign state who had killed British civilians... the government would not be asking that foreign state to compile, an inquiry of how this happened. They'd want immediate answers. You know, the response was so slow at the beginning. The response was, you know, Sunak started off by saying that he was shocked and saddened to hear of the deaths. The deaths? And then then David Cameron came out stronger than that. And then by the end of the day, Sunak said that he'd been on the phone to Netanyahu, where he was just like, what the hell is going on? And that's pretty much it.
Anyway. Got another... Don't worry, we're sending you more.
Another engagement.
Don't worry, still sending you more. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep up the great work, is what he shouted.
Yeah.
Down the phone.
But so for all of the talks, so Britain's arms exports, it's... we don't really supply like a considerable amount. There's not, it's not like...
The US provides the vast
exactly.
majority.
Exactly. America provides the vast majority. But it would be... It would be symbolic if Britain were to halt those arms exports. And it also sort of shows how, I mean, not that you need more proof, but it shows how sort of pathetic the country is on the world stage. Because, you know, even in terms of soft power, you would have thought that Sunak would have been able to phone up Biden and say, look, we need to...
Hey, pal.
Yeah. You're providing a lot. We're thinking we're going to withdraw. We're not going to, you know, continue with licensing these exports. I think together we should stand firm and tell him it's not happening. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that Sunak actually has the... If one of their secretaries rang up the White House and said, we would like to arrange a call between the Prime Minister and the President, I think they'd probably say, okay, how's next Tuesday? You know, I don't... It's not...
Who?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't think it would be high up on their agenda. No. I mean, in terms of, like, the news that actually gets discussed in the White House press briefings about Britain, I'm pretty sure the only thing that gets asked about now is questions about the royal family. The last time probably. That I think Britain came up during that press conference was genuinely when that Photoshop of Kate Middleton was all over the internet. And I think that a question... then actually made it to the White House. But they don't care.
No.
We've got no influence whatsoever.
No. And it's also, but it's even like, not even, even if we were the tiniest country in the world with no influence at all, you would still expect a government to make a stand after three citizens were killed.
Yeah, we're moving like Belgium in World War II or something. Like,
in World War II?
We're just sort of like, take it.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Do anything. There was a good. Did you read? Anne Bassani did a good piece in Unheard, and so I was going to tell this anecdote, and then I was like, "This is just." I'm just going to credit Bassani with writing this. He wrote about in the early 19th century, a British citizen was killed, harassed.
In... Very different things.
He was bothered.
Right.
Anywhere on a scale from irked to murdered.
Okay.
In Athens, and no, he didn't die. He was robbed in Athens, and they complained to, and the Greek authorities were not helping him out. I think it was because he was Jewish, and then Britain blockaded Greece. That was the response. The man didn't die. They were like, you've bothered one of our citizens. You've bothered a Brit. No trade for Greece anymore. And that's sick. That's what we used to be a country. Admittedly, we were a very different country doing terrible things at that time. And we're still one of those now.
But with no influence.
Yeah.
Shit.
What's the point?
What is the bloody point?
Return to the British Empire.
It does... You heard there were even various broadcasters and presenters quite firmly stating that this was most likely an accident.
Who, morons. You're a moron if you think that. You're thick. You know what's mental? Nick Ferrari is now... an extremist on this.
He is.
Nick Ferrari believes we should suspend or halt exports of arms to Israel.
That was a really interesting monologue that he did on LBC about that, because he explained his entire process of how he came to that conclusion. I just thought it was just very interesting.
What was his reasoning?
Sorry, this is actually a bit cheap that I'm saying this, but I just thought it was a very nice bit of radio. He basically said that he came into the office early because he wanted to read everything.
Wow.
Like, he wanted to read everything before he came on air. And his conclusion was, we absolutely should not be supplying arms to Israel, particularly because his point was, there's nothing to say one of our bombs hit that truck, but there's nothing to say that one of our bombs didn't hit that truck. I thought it was a really interesting...
They repeatedly fired it.
Well, look...
There might be someone from Hamas in there.
When I commit an accident,
like a war crime.
When I accidentally step into the road, say when a car's coming, I actually do it four or five times.
Just stumbling over yourself.
Yeah.
Like Sideshow Bob with the rakes.
Yes. Exactly. Careful, because Chris Bryant is not a fan of that meme. Are you saying I should be repeatedly hit in the head with a hammer?
Yes.
Ah.
That's how gifts work. That's how, it's good that you can just extrapolate meaning from that. Did you see what Alan Duncan said?
Tell me.
He has accused senior people in the House of Lords, Tom Tugendhat, of being under Israeli influence. Mm. Essentially, he said he called for the sacking of Tom Tugendhat as security minister on LBC again. LBC gets a lot of time on Politics Show.
It does, yeah.
I think we have an institutional bias because three of us used to work there and two of us refused to.
Well, we talk about the BBC a lot as well.
True. But anyway, that's just a...
And the Telegraph. Are you joking? Telegraph is like my safe word.
Arrest me. Telegraph. Stop it, Telegraph. Anyway.
I told you earlier, didn't I, that I could be arrested.
Why?
Because I was talking last night that I hadn't moved my GP practice from my old house. And I hadn't moved it yet. And his response was, that's illegal. Yeah,
that's prison.
Prison.
Prison forever.
Yeah.
Good luck. We'll give you a shout out when you're listening to this on prison radio.
Thank you.
After you finish with Diary of a CEO, you'll move on to this.
Yeah.
Let's get back to Alan Duncan.
Back to Alan Duncan.
He said, called for Tom Tugendhat to be sacked for refusing to condemn illegal settlements that violate international law. How can you have a security minister who does not believe in international law? He also said, it's time to flush out those extremists in our own politics, some of whom are at the very top of government, discussing conservative friends of Israel. He also talked about members of the House of Lords, like Lord Pickles, as being under the influence of Netanyahu.
Right.
And he's now being accused of being anti-Semitic, suggesting that Jewish people... I think a lot of people he mentioned are Jewish, and he's being criticised for suggesting that they're under the yoke of Israel.
I don't think we're the two best placed people to unpick that. Because... my thought is, yeah, that is a trope, isn't it? If you're a Jewish public figure and you're being told that you're under the influence of Netanyahu, but if you're the security minister who's not, Tom Tugendhat is very vocal on China's influence on the UK, but saying that there's an Israeli influence on the UK is that to me doesn't add up as being anti-Semitic, because then you should apply that same logic to when he's talking about any other potential influence that there is on the UK, right?
I think it's interesting, well, the groups that are friends of Israel. Imagine there was like conservative friends of Saudi Arabia. No one would be happy with that.
Yeah.
Conservative friends of China.
Yeah, and the Redbird, who were trying to buy The Spectator and The Telegraph. And there was uproar about it. You know, should a foreign state be allowed to own certain media? Is that being, are you being xenophobic to that state?
Yeah, no, I don't think you are.
Yeah.
If you're concerned about, like, especially if it was like, who's Redbird owned by?
Yeah, that's what I've just forgotten. Who is Redbird owned by? Yeah.
So if it's owned by an authoritarian state, yeah, you should kind of, if your press freedom isn't amazing in your own country, you shouldn't get to own one of ours. It's interesting as well, the conflation of criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. As in, I wonder if people would object. Say Lord Pickles and Lord Polak, say they weren't Jewish. Would people object to the criticism of them being under the... like, as in...
yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, given like the fact, like, would they object to that criticism?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you. I don't know.
Mm.
But yeah.
Because it seems to just...
I think it's a valid question.
I also think it's valid criticism. I think it's like you can criticise Israel without being anti-Semitic. And I would argue this is one of those times that I think is valid criticism of being close to the state of Israel.
Yeah, and I think that some of the what's levied at Muslim MPs is that, well, of course they would be sympathetic to Gaza.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty... if you flip that...
Yeah, remember Zahra Sultan was, like, accused of being Hamas sympathiser?
Yes, yes.
That was mental.
I do, yeah.
And absolutely extraordinary.
You can go and watch that. That's on our YouTube if you'd like to. It was,
yes.
It happened in the chamber, in the Commons chamber.
It's absolutely extraordinary.
Which was totally extraordinary.
If you're also in the mood to watch great political content, Ollie's interview with Bassem Youssef.
Yeah.
The Egyptian John Stewart. as his build is brilliant, and it's on the YouTube channel now. Mm. Did you see the dance Ollie did with Bassam?
I did see the Instagram dance, yeah.
Should we play that now?
Yeah.
So enjoy that. That was...
missed me.
Telegraph. Should we move on?
Oh, wait, can we just do a little tiny brief bit? Yes. Can I just say that, did you see yesterday that Stephen Flynn wrote to Speaker of the House?
Yes.
And Keir Starmer? And the Lib Dems had a similar letter, both of them calling for the recall of Parliament, which the Speaker doesn't actually have the authority to do. It would have to be a minister mm-hmm. who recalls it. But it was a nice gesture.
Nice gesture.
It was quite, you know, Stephen Flynn has been consistent. Mm-hmm. The Lib Dems, I actually thought, had a bit of gall coming out saying that yesterday. Because on some of the biggest days during this conflict, the Liberal Democrats, who love sending a press release, and I know because I read them all.
you're the one.
You know, they love sending a press release, and they've been totally silent on Gaza.
No, Leila Moran.
Leila Moran, fine.
Leila Moran, a very, very
When I'm
exception.
Talking about Lib Dems, I mean the party. Because that's like saying, when I say the Labour Party has been X, but there are many, there are MPs inside the Labour Party who have been vocal.
Yes.
Yeah. So the Lib Dem as a party haven't been sending out press releases. And actually, it'd be quite interesting to count up how many they've sent on sewage discharges during the conflict compared mm-hmm. to what they've said about Gaza.
Maybe they would do it if, like, they could do a stunt about, like, the blue wall. If they could, like, use a drone.
Smash the settlements, something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, one of the little stunts.
Yeah, which would they love to do.
I don't really get that sort of...
The stunts?
No, I don't get that quietness on it because...
No.
Also, when you talk to MPs in around Parliament, if you talk to them at the bars or you talk to them because you catch them getting a coffee in Portcullis House, the first thing they want to talk to you about is Israel-Gaza. Mm-hmm. That's what they want to talk to you about. But they don't want to talk about it in public. I think that's really important.
It's also as well, the Lib Dems in the public imagination are an afterthought. If they came out really strongly, one way or the other, ideally the way we don't want, they could make a real name for themselves and be like, yeah, we're going to just be the... In a way, actually, that the SNP have kind of done. Been consistently...
Yeah. It's just interesting to me because I think, you know, when the Ukraine war started, people were proud to wear the Ukrainian flag in Parliament and people were proud to talk about their support for Ukraine. And I'm not suggesting that everyone should be wearing a Palestinian or Israeli flag, but because the footballification of it, I just don't think
it's helpful.
It's not helpful. And, you know, I don't think it'd be helpful for people to walk around like wearing team badges.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about like, you know, iconography being important, but it's just interesting how one conflict, people are really proud to talk about it. And then there's this other conflict and people shy away from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially now that the British public opinion is now at odds with, or it's moved quicker than, like, the actual politicians.
Yeah.
Like, British public want a ceasefire.
Especially a lot of them that work in, like, the defence, sit on the Defence Select Committee or the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, because I think that, you know, we don't cover the international side of it because we're not there, but we've always covered the Westminster side of it. And it's actually quite hard to cover the parliamentary part of it because there's actually not really that much going on.
No.
Like, you know, every time there's been a select committee or there's been an urgent question or whatever, we've done that, we've covered it and it's been on the website or we've spoken about it. But in actually, like, trying to get actual lines, singular lines out of politicians about who, what, where, when, how, they're really reticent to speak on it.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends.
For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Shut the fridge.
It's the Politics Show cast.
Now, on to my favourite story this week of, well, if you want to catch us up with what this is, I teased it like that.
Teased it?
Yeah, just like that. The WhatsApps have been teasing the people in Parliament.
Okay, it's actually been wonderful to see how much joy this has brought Ed Campbell.
It's the funniest thing in the world.
So, there has been a suspected honey trap scandal targeting Westminster. A senior Labour MP, an ex-MP, four party staffers and a political journalist and a serving government minister are amongst 12 men known to have been targeted by, well, by people calling themselves Abby and Charlie. Charlie, I think, was also Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And in these targeted attacks, they sent, they called for pictures of the men's penises. They said things like, "Hey, I met you in the Woolsack the other day," which is the name for the sports bar in Parliament. Or, "Hey, great seeing you at that event last night. Sorry we didn't get to chat more. Can I see your penis?"
About bloody time!
Yeah. And apparently, this probably lends itself to the next topic that we're going to do as well, which is about men's mental health. But
is that a really negative?
They go, "Well, someone I don't know from a phone number I've never seen before has asked to see my penis, so I must show them."
It's people are so, they're so thick. There's so many like nice details about like the number in question had. So they're targeting straight MPs and gay MPs, and to facilitate this, I think the smarter thing to do if you're listening, you should have used two numbers and had like one for each gender, because they had their WhatsApp photo was a man and a woman. So they didn't have to change.
So lazy.
It's lazy. It's bad. They could have got way more if they'd been more to put. It's also the, I think political, this is a political story as well. Political interviewed like an expert in, I don't know, sending nudes. I don't really know what, I don't know what qualifies as an expert in this story.
I was the expert.
But they said, "It's remarkable how unsophisticated this was."
Yeah.
So like you would imagine receiving a text. And it says, "Hi Ed, great seeing you at," it's Charlie, "great meeting you at the trade union conference last year. I'm single now, how are you?" What? I have no recollection of that woman, but I am sure that I must have been charming and flirty, so I'm gonna next you. Oh, phenomenal news. A photo of her breast. Oh. It is time. It is time to show this stranger a photo of my willy. She will surely fall in love with me. Why don't I call her to ask? She's not answering. Oh, I better send it anyway. It's me. I'm a cabinet minister. Oh no, I'm running late for cabinet. Sorry I'm late, chaps. If you've fallen for this, like there's so much, people are like, "Oh, there's a targeted security attack on Westminster." If you fall for this, you're stupid. You're thick. You're like, this is like the kind of thing you're talking like PSE at school to avoid, being like, "Don't send photos of your penis to strangers on the internet."
Well, now we know what's been going on in Nicola Sturgeon's Scotland. Have you been having lessons to not send
like internet safety lessons at school? Did you get that?
No, I didn't know.
I'm sure it was like, "Don't talk to strangers online."
I do remember one PSHE lesson where it was a Catholic school, so you didn't really learn much about sex ed, but did a little bit of sex ed. And I do remember one where we learned not to get into the Thames because it'll kill you.
Slightly different. I don't know how that pertains to this. Two good pieces of advice. Don't, like, I suppose in the age of, like, dating apps and Grindr stuff, you can't just be like, well, if you're going to send photos of your penis to someone, make sure that person is real and not a potential, like, Russian spy.
No, wait, can we bring up the best bit?
What's the best bit?
My favourite line of it was that one of the men who was targeted mm-hmm. by the Chinese state was like, oh, can I meet up with you tonight in a pub? And she said yes. And then he went to the pub and sat there and she just didn't show up. You could not torture that information out of me.
No. Imagine, like, we've got, like, stories about friends who've been catfished or, like, quite embarrassing things.
Yeah.
Imagine where people were talking about it as if it's, like, state secret. As if, like, imagine you're one of these people and people are, like, talking about this like this. It would be the most mortifying thing.
Mm.
It's so stupid. Are people too horny to be in cabinet?
Is that the question you've got for me? Are people too horny?
If you do, like, if you're doing this and you don't work out, like, actually the cabinet minister, I think might not have fallen for it, to be fair to them, but say they did. If you're a cabinet minister or you work in, like, a secure environment where you have access to people, to things that people might be interested in, what your MP's saying about whatever, it could be like corporate espionage or like actual espionage or whatever, would you not recognise that, like, it's the thought of being so horny that all of those thoughts just go out the window? Or just being like, well, okay, I am sexually a magnet to this beautiful stranger whose name I don't know, have any photos of bar this random nude.
Yeah, photo of her rack. Oh, I'd know that rack anywhere.
Oh, we did meet.
Yeah. No, it's an incredible story. Can you imagine, which I think is what you were just saying?
Yes.
That one of your friends sits down with you and tries to explain that they've been stood up and blames it on Chinese espionage. But also, I think to sort of understand why some of the senior MPs wouldn't have been that confused by mm-hmm. just, you know, tits in their DMs. Like, Westminster is a really horny place.
Yes.
People are just getting in all the time, you know? And if they're not getting it in, they're thinking about how to get it in.
The stories I know from someone who doesn't work in Westminster, extraordinary.
Yeah.
It doesn't stay in Westminster, fellas. We all know.
Yeah. There's, yes, well, they'd like to keep it in Westminster.
Yes, but it doesn't because people gossip.
Anyway, so they're talking about it all the time. Sex is on the brain, especially conference season. Conference is a mess. All it is just, you think just people nerds are doing policy? No.
They're
getting peen.
Penancy.
Yeah.
It's just like 18-year-olds who've never met a girl before finally getting a whiff. A whiff of Fanny.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, the girl. They end up chained to a travel lodge. I was trying to say Premier Inn, but I kept saying travel. Travel lodge radiator, being choked out by a policy wonk.
The grossest people you'll know. That's not fair. Let me do that again. The most sexless looking people you know will go to conference and have sex with 10 different women.
Yeah.
And it'll be because they're like senior advisor to so-and-so.
To an MP you've literally never heard of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is why when someone sends an MP their tits, mm-hmm. that MP thinks, well,
it's another Tuesday for me. It's probably just one of, like, they probably sent, all the people involved in this probably sent so many dick pics, like, that day. They were like, oh, which one was this? Oh, that one was fake? Oh, well. The 9 others were real.
Mm.
And then they've got photos of my peen.
So they got their peens out.
They got their peens out, and four cybersecurity experts have confirmed the messages appear to be a targeted attack. Yeah, that's obvious. Yeah, there's they're getting MPs' numbers and trying to get dick pics off them so they can blackmail them for state secrets, which is quite sick.
Ready?
Right.
When the former MP asked again who they were, the sender gave a surname and also the name of an MP they claimed to work for. They sent, "Now you know I'm not just a random popping up to compliment your ass."
Not normal flirting. That's a normal thing to say. That's a normal text to receive. Oh, I feel like I'm complimenting. Oh, I do have a nice bottom.
You do look good. What would you do if you...
What, if this was me?
If you got a text.
You look good. Send back the most explicit video you can imagine.
Yeah.
Squat over the camera.
The Joe mic of just covering you.
Tasteful. My friend, at uni, my friend was in production of, you know, Equus?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so like about a troubled boy who blinds horses or something.
Mm.
I actually didn't see this play.
Oh, I thought you meant the think tank.
No, the play.
Okay, carry on. I don't know that, but carry on.
But there's a Daniel Radcliffe was in it on Broadway. I think it was his first big like post-Harry Potter thing, because like, I want to get away from Harry Potter. So he performed naked on Broadway for like 3 months.
I remember this, yeah.
Yeah. So like there's a scene where he has to be naked. And my friend played, whatever, the character that is naked.
He played his penis.
At uni. And he said like, he was thinking about how it's like, obviously like fucking 18 or 19. So this is, this man is not a professional actor at this point. He should be. He's very good. But just being like, it's very funny to be like, for the sake of student theatre, I will be I'll be naked on stage. Yeah. And he said he was very conscious of it not being like calendar girls, of being like, he didn't want to be like the whole time. So if people saw peen. And then a few years later, I introduced him to one of my friends. And my friend was like, I think we've met before. And they were like trying to like brainstorm like, where are you at this party? And then she was like, oh my God, I saw Equus. Which is the worst way to meet someone.
Oh yeah, because his face was in it too. I was so...
He was wearing a mask.
He's just like...
Wearing a mask.
I've seen that before.
Hanging dong.
Why did he come to the pub with you and your friends with his dick out?
He was wearing nothing. He was like still in character, like Austin Butler is Elvis. Yeah. He was that. He was there.
That's very good.
Yeah, that's a... He took it very seriously, as he should, because he's very talented. And that probably had a bit of detriment to his men's mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Which is our next...
It's a good segue.
Thank you.
You really jammed it in there, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. You were very late to compliment that.
Did you see? Yeah, because you jammed it in there. He really thumbed that one in.
That's another callback. That was an early episode.
That was an early episode,
That was
yeah.
great. There's like... Just good... I feel like... With our audience, they caught on to things for like a month. And then because no one said thumbing it in a while. On
yeah,
the
no one's going to remember thumbing it in.
No. Comment if you remember thumbing it in. Mm. Ooh, remember thumbing it in.
I got loads of messages about which one fancied you at the Porn Awards.
What?
Loads of DMs about it.
Really? I didn't see anything.
Just want to say Louis. Louis was the most recent person to DM me about it. And he got it correct.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Congratulations, Louis.
Well done, Louis.
You win the prize.
What's the prize?
You've got to send a dick pic.
Dick or hole. Your choice. Okay, well, you didn't get it right.
My hands are tied here.
Everyone has to leave the studio because I'm all fours on the desk. Being prized open.
Why would you be being prized open?
A slow zoom in.
Your mate from Equus is standing in the back.
Galloping.
It's the Politics Show cast.
In the latest episode of Extreme Britain, I went to the most miserable place in the UK, which is actually Ader in West Sussex, and we went specifically to the showroom to ask them what they think, how to fix men's mental health. And it was published when... I know you can't watch it yet because it was published when you were out.
Sorry.
No, don't worry.
I look forward to watching it.
Yeah, she should, as should everyone.
Well, yeah, but your extreme Britons are very good.
Thank you. So is all your content.
Name one bit of my content.
I can't. Never watch. I've got no idea. So I moved again. So they talked about... There was a really good... I asked people what they thought was causing the crisis in mental health. And I think this man kind of nailed it.
I would suggest that people are working too hard, too long for too little. And with a shortage of housing and a cost of living crisis, you know, that combination is bound to have serious mental health effect. The workplace is mostly of men, although women nowadays are making headway in gaining equality. But if you can't provide for your family, it causes men a great deal of depression and sadness because there doesn't seem to be any alternative to work. If there's just nothing around here really. It's all service industry, delivering food on motorcycles and bicycles, and that's about it. Working in supermarkets, you can't make enough money to provide for your family. That's sort of the problem. We've moved to a service economy, and that's an excuse, basically. If you're any kind of economy at all, you have to be manufacturing, at least in part, for your own economy. And we don't anymore. It's that simple. We don't have a manufacturing industry anymore.
I think he nails that. I think it's, if we're serious about fixing men's mental health, it's not just, I think we say it a lot, it's not just Dr. Alex as the male mental health ambassador. It needs to be like systemic societal changes. Because if you're stressed about...
Are you back in podcast mode now?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
Carry on.
If you are stressed about work, like you're not being paid enough, you can't afford to feed your family, say you might have to rely on a food bank, and you're stressed about your insecure rent, and all those things affect, well, not just men's mental health, but everyone's mental health. And there seems to be a shyness. It's very easy to say, talk to a mate or whatever, but your mate's not going to pay your rent for you.
They're two different things though, aren't they? They're two different types of mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's like extraordinary stress that's being put on people, right? Which is fixable by, like, you can get better when your material circumstance gets better, right? And then there's another type of mental health, which is that you're chronically ill.
Yes.
And the two have been conflated.
That's true, actually.
By a government that doesn't want to fund the mental health crisis, so that doesn't want to fix it. So when you read that there are 500,000 children on prescriptions for mental health, there are probably children there who've got situational depression, and then you've got children who've got chronic depression.
Mm.
And because there isn't the facilities or funding to help them, they get smashed together and both get put on like Cetraline.
Yeah. What do you think needs to happen?
I think that we need to have a public health outlook on it. I think that we need to have, I think a lot of money needs to be invested in therapists, because the NHS is talking therapies. It does help some people, but for the majority of people, it's quite useless, because we've talked about this before. You're basically like, if you are in crisis in this country, you are going to get incredible help.
Yes.
And if you are just depressed, even though that malaise might be taking over your life, it's not going to get, you're not going to be offered anything.
Yeah, it's just muddling on.
Yeah, you're going to be told to go for a little run and put some lavender on your pillow.
Someone spoke about it in the video. They said, they kind of referred to the UK is a service economy now, and there's like some theories or academics suggest that men find it more difficult to work in the service economy because it values, rewards traits that aren't traditionally masculine. Is it more?
Yeah, I don't know if I like that argument, though.
Yeah, no, I completely get it.
Because I think, because the school of internet thought at the moment mm-hmm. is that it's emasculating to work in the service sector, mm-hmm. right? So it's like a pressure that men are putting on themselves
yep.
that doesn't actually exist, you know? It's a bit girly, isn't it? It's a bit girly to be a teacher, isn't it? It's a bit girly, mm-hmm. which is totally weird because if you look back, like even 40 years, most teachers were men.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know what that shift is. That's a cultural shift that is.
But I think there is something to be said, though, about say when you were a child, your vision of what your work would be, say, is probably quite different to what it actually is and what you're able to achieve. As in, like, most people our age, men our age, probably wouldn't be able to provide. I don't say most. I don't know. A lot of men might want to have a family and start and like. Support a family or support whatever, and they wouldn't be able to on the salary that they're on.
Oh yeah, for sure.
There isn't the wages, there isn't the support, there isn't the housing to accommodate that. And I think there's like a gap between people's imagined futures and actually what's happened, which I think would have a really damaging effect on your, because even if like obviously like masculinity is. It's like a social construct and whatever, but those traditional pressures exist, and if you've internalized them, if that's the pressure you're putting on yourself and not meeting those standards, I think that probably is really damaging.
Mm.
Even if it is like they shouldn't feel that working like it's emasculating to work in hospitality or in the service industry or whatever, but they do, and that is damaging. That's like there isn't the traditional manly industries anymore.
Yeah, I suppose so. Although I would say, you know, okay, let's go for like the traditional definition of manly. Mm-hmm. I would argue it's quite manly to be a nurse. It's quite manly to be like a trauma nurse, that it's like, you know, mm-hmm. dealing with like blood spurting out of people and like, you know, sewing people up mm-hmm. and, you know, doctor, they're dead.
that's the manliest thing you can say. Admit your fault. But I couldn't save him.
There's just some sort of farce, really, isn't there, in like how like internet culture would say that like someone in the service sector is girly,
mm.
but it's very manly to be like, I don't know, an account executive at a marketing agency.
I don't think that's what they mean.
No, but come on.
It does like show the kind of the hollowness of that thought, or like the silliness of art of it.
It's totally the thought is redundant
because those masculine industries just don't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's really manly.
You can't be a miner like, anymore. You can't be a steel worker.
Yeah, graphic designer, are you manly? Yeah, you know, teaching the next generation of children. You know, teaching,
caring,
teaching our country, caring,
caring, caring, girly,
girl.
I also asked the people in showroom about. Male role models. If there's anyone in the kind of public eye that they think that they would like, Ed Campbell, that you would want like one woman who's had a son, who you would want your son to be, and she struggled to name anyone alive, but she did say Nelson Mandela.
Which, oh, okay, fine.
But I think that's too high a bar. I think if you end apartheid, that is too high a bar. There should be someone at like a much more achievable level.
So I thought you were going for Nelson, as in like you know, way back when Nelson.
Admiral Nelson. But well, that's too high a bar as well.
Yeah.
If you bring down Napoleon, it's either end apartheid or end the tyranny of Napoleon.
He just did something mental when he said end apartheid. I don't know if anyone else caught that.
My hand was like that.
No. Not the first hand. Okay. Well, who would be your role model? If I was a man, mm-hmm. I would have two role models mm-hmm. for how I was feeling about different situations. I would either be like Austin Butler, like if I can't achieve it, I will try really, really hard. Like, you know how we did for Elvis, where he worked at that and mm-hmm. method acting for like a year before he got achieved the role.
Which is very funny though.
And then on another day I'd be Jacob Elordi, which is, I don't even know who Elvis is. So I'm just gonna breeze into this and just do it.
I have the confidence of both those two men. I also think as well there's a lot of people were criticizing, maybe because they don't know an awful lot of young men, being like, well, they just love social media stars. But like the idea that being a social media content or like a content creator is inherently bad. Like, not all content creators are Andrew Tate or Aidan Ross or something like that. You can, like, I think if young kids idolize, like,
is that the new money?
The new money?
Yeah.
What?
Is it new money now to be an influencer?
Is it new money to...
You know, like old money, new money?
Yes.
Like, you know, hereditary wealth or traditionally, you know, or like trade wealth. Yeah. Okay. Now, like, new money is like influencer. Old money is like you work in a bank.
Celebrity. Yeah. Being a footballer is old money. Being an influencer is new money.
Yeah.
Probably. But then I think, is that not just by definition of you're like, you didn't have money and now you do?
Yeah, but I was just saying, like, you know, like in the way that, like, you'd be snooty about it.
Yes. I think, yes, actually, I get your point. I think that probably is.
I don't know why it took you so long. I explained it so terribly.
Someone commented on the Extreme Britain video with some suggestions of who some good male role models are. Marcus Rashford.
Yeah, good one.
Keanu Reeves. Quite a random one, I thought.
I think who that is.
Is in The Matrix? Yeah. Yeah. Actor.
Doesn't help me.
Joe Rogan was the next one.
Yeah. Keanu Reeves. I still don't.
Where you can be bald and jacked. Next one was Stormzy.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the Politics Show team, which was nice. Very sweet.
I am the man you want to be.
Men should be more like Laura and Ava. Mm. Owen Jones, Michael Walker, and Aaron Bastani. Any of those, pick one of us and
Keanu
you're on to winner.
Ed Campbell.
Pick one. Red pill, blue pill.
I think I like... Wait, I literally just thought of one. Have you got one?
To be a male role model.
I know. Just get rid of the Barbie thing out of your head for 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Just ignoring Barbie and ignoring all of that because I'm not on that feminism kind of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But Ryan Gosling, because when he made La La Land,
mm-hmm.
he did this speech when I think he won like a Golden Globe for it or something. And he basically just said that if his wife Eva hadn't...
Eva Mendes.
Yeah. Hadn't made the ultimate sacrifice for him, which is to basically stay at home, give birth, have this newborn while he went off and lived his dream, then he would have never been able to do it. Like if she hadn't made that sacrifice. And it goes back to what Laura was saying like a few months ago about, you know, the who cooked Adam Smith's dinner. Eva Mendes did. And... Ryan Gosling acknowledged that. And to me, that is like...
That's sick.
That is like a man.
I don't know what interview it was in, but he gave a really... Well, actually, it might have been the same speech, but a different interview, but about Eva Mendes. And it's like, it's insanely romantic.
Yeah.
About how much he loves her. It's very nice.
Yeah.
I was interested. I was talking to Laura about this. Laura, I'm going to repeat your words. Tell me if I fuck this up. But Laura kind of objects to the idea of men needing male role models. Because Laura said when she wanted to get into journalism, all the people she looked to were men because there was very few women to look up to. What do you think about that? Do you think it's like...
Yeah, I get that.
Is the idea that men can't idolise women?
I get that as an ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Well, it kind of goes back to, like, I think what we all generally think. I think people our age think about gender, which mm-hmm. is you don't really... A lot of people our age don't really see gender as a construct. You don't really think, like...
No.
I have to be... I've always found, like... awards for women,
like best actor or best actress, or
I've always just found it a bit no not that so much, but you know, like in policy or like anything,
women
like
in journalism,
I've always found that quite tiresome
because
it's sort of like, well, it kind I think that by subcategorizing women, you kind of have to, like, you're like making a special dispensation as if they've got like mm-hmm. something wrong, like they've got like a,
they've overcome the disability of being a woman to
do you know what
here.
I mean,
yeah, like, I kind of get you,
it doesn't really anyway. But yeah, I think particularly people Laura's age, out of our category. But you don't really see gender as a construct.
Yeah.
And it's so unhealthy. Like, the binary choice that Andrew Tate is making boys make between, like, you know, like, men are for looking up to and women are for fucking.
And women are for imprisoning
yeah.
and using as sex slaves.
Yeah.
That's the choice that Andrew Tate is offering.
Yeah, but it's so unhealthy.
Like, it's mental. Like,
think about, like, most of you, you've got loads of female friends.
Yeah.
And, like, most of my guy friends have loads of female friends,
too. I think
too.
It's very strange.
It's so healthy.
I think it's really strange
like
if you don't.
Yeah,
have,
like, I do too.
Female friends.
Yeah, and then they're like, you know that the internet loves getting into that debate, which is like, men can't have female friends.
Like wanting to sleep with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's no, like
that is a deeply unhelpful way to think,
yeah,
sir.
It's also not true.
Yeah.
Like, fully not true.
Mm.
Like, some of my closest friends are female.
And you slept with all of them.
That's how we became friends.
Yeah. They kept sending me their boobs. I'm friends with the Chinese state.
My best friend. Yeah.
Is Xi Jinping.
Who's your favourite man?
Who's my favourite man?
Yeah.
My dad.
Aww. Mm. That's sick.
He is. He's a little mate.
Yeah.
Who's your favourite man? Is it your brother?
Yeah. I wasn't going to say that. Good save. Oh. I was going to say like John Mulaney or something. Yes, my brother. Not John Mulaney. Mm. Who's your favourite woman that you're not related to?
You know that my mum will listen to this now and she'll be like, she'll be talking
okay,
about
assuming,
this
assuming
for years.
You can't know them.
Who's my favourite woman?
Yeah.
Probably like my best friends.
I said you can't know them.
I can't know them?
Yeah.
What if I have a parasocial relationship? No. Oh, I can't know them. Oh, God, that's really hard. I don't know. Who's your favourite woman?
Mallrat.
Who's that?
An Australian singer. Consistently my like number one most listened to on Spotify.
Oh, really?
Behind Los Campesinos. I think they're my two favourite artists in the world. Listen to stream Mallrat.
Maybe Kim from the Pixies.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift.
Yeah, why are we even fucking asking the question?
I fucking around for.
You're Kim from the Pixies.
Who's your favourite woman that you do know?
My girlfriend.
Okay. Now you can tell me. She's my favourite woman too. We have a running joke that I'm going to be his girlfriend's maid of honour.
Oh, and just
at his wedding.
Yeah, and just quite a lot of people would. I wonder what would have to happen. Well, you'd have to like be friends. I don't know that you're not friends, but you don't hang out.
No, that's what you think.
Yeah, God.
It's a real insecurity fest.
How much? Do we have anything else?
No.
What do we have stuff to plug? Your interview with Sadiq.
Watch it if you want to.
Yeah, God, you're not good at this. Watch it. It's going to be great.
Tell us, though. Watch Extreme Britain.
Yeah. Watch Extreme Britain. Watch Ollie's interview with Bassem Youssef. Watch all the content on Politics Show. Get involved.
Mm.
There's tons of it. And subscribe to us on YouTube as well. And like it stuff. And make sure you watch all the videos to completion so the retention rate is really high.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
You don't want what's happening with the NHS to happen to our YouTube.
The stakes are as high.
They are.
We need serious government investment.
Serious. We need retention.
Mm-hmm. We need retention like we need doctors. All the retention is moving to Australia because pay is higher and the weather's nicer.
Mm.
So we need to stop it. We need to stop the brain drain.
We need retention like I need a tit in my DM.
Yes, on that note, thank you for listening to Politics Show Podcast. We'll see you next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.